You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and I have to say it's Friday again, and I see a lovely big chemtrail outside my window with horizontal stripes. So I guess we are in our current reality that is being foisted on us, that we have to figure out how to ascend out of. I want to introduce today's subject by way of an update on an announcement I made at the beginning of last week's show, which was that All Is One Heart Song, with whom I did an interview in early October, I believe it was October 3rd, and it was one of the few interviews he ever gave in his life. He was 80 years old, and he continues to be a phenomenal spirit now. He passed away during a thunderstorm. I was given a little more information, and it's very interesting because All Is One was very excited about the planetary ascension, which he believed would occur in 2012. He was looking forward to it. He taught me to embrace this development that all of us are heading into and not be afraid of it, not be afraid of the chaos that is clearly leading up to it. He said all one needs to do is embrace planetary ascension and participate in it. So I was very surprised that All Is One disappeared from the earth before 2012. And I learned that on Saturday night, he died on November 8th, Saturday. And this was the evening of a very huge thunderstorm in Mount Shasta, where he lived, which apparently is not usual at this time of year, or perhaps not even usual at all. But anyway, there was a tremendous storm. And All Is One, who was a regular journaler, he even told me that he journaled his emails, if you can believe it. I think that's what he said. He wrote in his journal fanatically, and there was only on November 8th one entry at 6:30 at night, and it had one word. The word was thunderstorm. And All Is One was discovered lying on the floor with his arms folded and a very peaceful smile on his face, and he hadn't fallen. He had lain himself down. That is the correct English, lain, L-A-I-N. And a friend of mine who told me this said that it's very possible that a giant electromagnetic force came and took All Is One with it. And that gives me goosebumps, loads and loads of goosebumps. When I talk about it, I'm covered with goosebumps right now. I think that could be very true. And that is the introduction that I'm making to today's subject, which is HARP, electromagnetism, the mind control aspects of HARP, the powerful, amazing energy that HARP contains that could be used to benefit us, that could be used to bring humanity into full potential, but this current version of HARP is doing the opposite. So I'm going to bring our two guests back at the end of the break, Alfred Weber and Loren Murray. You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org, the RBN network, and this is Sophia, your host, and I'm happy to reintroduce our guest, Alfred Weber, and hopefully we'll be able to get Loren Murray back as well today. But Alfred is, I think, on the line with us. Are you there, Alfred?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, great.
Alfred, what did you think of that introduction of the electromagnetic storm?
Well, you know, once one gets into the science of the soul and the kind of the physics of the interdimensional universe, the data there, and I'll use the word data there are very very interesting. There are reports, for example, of extraterrestrial craft, of upper dimensional extraterrestrial craft that are loaded with souls.
With souls?
Now, yes.
And what are souls, Alfred?
Well, if you look at yourself, for example, you know, or any one of our fellow 6 billion human beings, we're actually multidimensional time-space navigating units. If we're willing, just for purposes of answering this question and exploring this topic, to discard or look beyond the Western medical model, we are far more than the carbon unit or the biological mechanism known as our body, and that is known as our physical body, this is now being confirmed more and more by science, by the scientific method, rather. And of course, it has been long known in ancient sciences, the sciences of the ancient cultures, be it Chinese traditional medicine, or be it Vedic medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, or any of the traditional medicines. And this is getting to answer your question, what is the soul? I'm kind of unpacking the various layers of what we are as a human being, because what you see when you encounter the body of a human being is like encountering the tip of an iceberg, literally. And that iceberg can be massive, and can stretch many, many light years.
One person?
Yes.
Okay, so one person is like a package of something that transcends, or that extends, rather, way beyond the physical body, that is, you said it was a time and space traveling entity?
Yes.
So, okay, so these souls, they come and they inhabit one of us? Or how does the soul choose a body?
Yes, right. Now, well, first of all, our physical body is just one layer of the container, of the multidimensional container and mechanism that a soul inhabits. They are many, many layers. There's a to a body. There's an electromagnetic body called the aura. And this can be proven through various mechanisms. Kirlian photography is one, which is a form of photography which demonstrates that each human being is surrounded by an electromagnetic field that is actually emanates from that person, and is organically connected to biological and psychological processes that emanate from that person.
Okay, so now I want to tie this with the topic of our show today, if it's not premature to do so. It seems to me what you're saying is we are electromagnetic. That's kind of the organization of us. That's the space that we occupy. It's electromagnetically colored. It is electromagnetism. So this harp thing that we're talking about, which uses electromagnetism, it has the capacity then, I would assume, to affect us profoundly on levels that aren't even just physical, yeah?
Well, they're physical, but they're not visible. And because the electromagnetic spectrum, the visible part of the electromagnetic spectrum is a very narrow portion. But HAARP represents a weaponization or a destructive use of the electromagnetic spectrum. And,
okay.
And what it represents is taking a part of the electromagnetic components of the biosphere, namely the ionosphere, which is the one of the uppermost components of the upper atmosphere, that bordering on space. That component of the biosphere, which is nearest to space, and weaponizing it, taking that electromagnetism and weaponizing it. The analogy would be, and this is a rough analogy, is that if you take human cells and turn them into cancer cells to be used against the body, but that's just a rough analogy. You're using a natural system, an environmental system, namely the ionosphere, as a weapon, as a source of electromagnetism that then can be applied in a whole number of applications, because we live in a universe that in essence is a sea of electromagnetism.
Right, that's what I was trying to express. That
The
medium in which we live is electromagnetic, and we are, and parts of us that we don't even know how to define or explain, like our soul or spirit, is, from what you're saying, also electromagnetic, right?
Well, parts of our put it this way: there's our physical body. There are various electromagnetic bodies, more refined bodies in terms of our aura, our etheric bodies, which have very complicated valves on them called chakras, which in turn connect up with universal energy circuits. So we are like complex energy machines navigating through the electromagnetic spectrum. But we just see this picture of bodies walking through the autumn leaves as they fall, because that's the way that nature has designed our physical bodies and the visible spectrum that we see. But if we actually get into our etheric bodies, then there's a whole larger world in which we live, in which we have etheric bodies that relate to a much wider and broader portion of the electromagnetic spectrum, and which are drawing upon much farther reaches, both on the planet and off planet. Once you get into, for example, there is a model called the psi-mediated instrumental response model.
Okay, and before we discuss that, can I ask you a question, Alfred?
Yeah.
All right. When you start talking about the etheric body, I find myself, it's not really shutting down, but it's disengaging, because I see and hear the people in the New Age movement talking about this kind of thing all the time. And what I'm trying to create by the show and my own life and my own curiosity and exploration is a way to start...
Well, then call it the electromagnetic body.
Okay, well, that to me, maybe it sounds more technical. I'm trying to explore my own resistance to something that I know there's a big movement, this New Age movement, that I do not consider that I belong to for certain reasons.
Well, the etheric body is not New Age. That's an ancient term from the Vedic sciences.
Okay, we're going to be into our break in a second, and we'll be back in the next 3 minutes.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
You're listening to Expansion on RepublicBroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and my guest today is Alfred Weber. We're still trying to connect with Lorraine Murray. She was to join Alfred, and maybe she will in the later hour of this show. Anyway, Alfred, we were talking about the etheric body, and I was objecting to New Age terms, and I was more ready to call it the electromagnetic body, which reveals a sort of prejudice on my part, I must say. So that's what I'm trying to explore, because I believe that there is a division between people who are politically aware and awake and people who are, you just could call it metaphysically, some call it spiritually, growing. And they don't share the same platform of experience even. And somehow those two levels those two like worlds in which these respective groups live might be merged for much more understanding of what is really going on and what is possible given what's going on. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think let's see if we can evolve an idiom which might be a bridge. Strictly speaking, the physical body is an electromagnetic body, because we know that most of what you're looking at when you look at your arm and look at your hand, I'm sitting here looking at my hand now, and we know that it's mostly empty space, and it's composed of atoms and electrons, and these are which array in electromagnetic patterns, and it's those patterns which reflect back and are interpreted by my eye as a hand, so that my physical body is an electromagnetic body in a certain frequency mode. Let's just call it that way to keep it, you know, kind of a generic description. Well, there are other electromagnetic bodies that are also part of me and part of all humans. It's standard operating equipment that we have. And these have other names. The other names that we have are what you say might be New Agey. And so we have to find other names for the electromagnetic body known as the aura. But okay. There's a long history of aura photography through Curlian photography. And okay. If you go to the American Journal of Psychical Research, you'll see very, very elaborate scientific experiments that, you know, photograph the aura or photograph that particular electromagnetic body and correlate it to all sorts of moods and shifts and changes. And you've heard of the term indigo children.
Yes.
These are the 20 to 30-year-olds. Well, that's because they come in with the indigo auras. And so you get into a whole color-based system. And people are actually, if you could see the world rather than seeing people's bodies, but seeing their auras, which is what people who are more psychically sensitive do, then you would walk around and you would see an entirely different dimension of people. And,
right.
And you could tell, you could go further into the person just by coming into contact with them more than coming into contact with their body. You say, oh, I'm reading your body language. Well, subconsciously, you might be reading their aura.
Well, again, this is about generalizing. When, to go back to something you said earlier, when you say that the eye looks at the hand and reads it as a hand rather than this universe of the empty space and particles racing around, that's a generalization. The eye is seeing, the eye is choosing to see certain frequencies and register those frequencies within the brain, and that's called the hand, and we're taught to generalize in that way as a, almost as a social process. I have to tell you, I have seen an aura. I had a friend once, and I looked at her, and I said, oh my God, I see your aura. I saw her surrounded by this brilliant, bright cerulean blue. It was like light radiating from her, and that was the first and only time I've ever seen it, and I know I wasn't mistaken. I knew exactly what it was, and I don't know why I only saw it once in my whole life, but I did. So I can believe that.
So you were then, you were experiencing a part of her multidimensional self, and there are other parts of her multidimensional self. Wherein resides the mind. In other words, each of us has a mind. It's not an abstraction. It's a physical thing. It's just in a different part of the electromagnetic spectrum.
All right, well, we have another short break, and I would be very interested to continue after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
To Expansion on Republic Broadcasting, the RBN Network. The URL is republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and we are in a conversation, Alfred Weber and I. Alfred is back for, I think, his third time. And Alfred, I have to say, I find you extremely fascinating because you happen to know so much about so many things, and you have a very patient, kind way of explaining and steering me, or guiding, I should say, guiding me through my objections, which I am noting as we talk, because everyone has resistance to certain kinds of descriptions because of what they think is preferable to align with and what they don't want to accept. And I notice this, you know, in my experience trying to wake people up to all the rabbit holes, as I call them. But sometimes it's simply a matter of languaging and finding the right path. So you were talking about the mind, and you were explaining that the mind is just another, and you used the word distant part of the electromagnetism of a being. Am I right in repeating it that way?
Yeah, I may have said distinct.
Oh, distinct. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, because in Western philosophy, they say, oh, that's a mind-body problem, making a distinction or a separation between mind and body. Well, no, the mind is part of the body. It's just not part of what we call the physical body, i.e., this two-legged humanoid part. The two-legged humanoid part is, think of it as our space suit. For
a space suit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there, you know, as though we were on the moon or on Mars. You know, and so you land on the moon and remember those, the kind of the classic space suits?
Yes.
That astronauts wear? Well, you've got 6 or 7 billion people wearing 6 or 7 billion space suits. That's what our deeper bodies need to survive the conditions of this planet. We have bio space suits. Bio space suits.
Okay, now I'm going to dissect another word here because it's going to help me understand. You said to survive the conditions on this planet, as though those are hostile conditions. But could I choose the word to experience?
Oh, sure. To experience this planet. Yeah, you're right. That's a better term. To experience this planet, we experience it. One of the things that we use is this biospace suit that in our conventional trance we call our body.
Okay, now I'm gonna say one thing and then jump on another word you use. Hopefully my brain can remember both at once. All right, so I would say that the biophysical or biological spacesuit that we wear is necessary or is the vehicle that connects us to the ecosystem of the planet. Because were we something else, for instance, anything inorganic, or were we just spirits, disembodied, we wouldn't have a connection, a working connection with oxygen, with flora, fauna, which actually serves to feed us, right? So we need this physical suit in order to be linked up with everything else in this experience.
Yes, and that's the whole miracle of incarnation. Incarnation, i.e. and reincarnation. I.e., this is like someone I know, a close, says, we got the e-ticket in the carnival ride. I.e., one way to look at incarnation on planet Earth or any other incarnation is as a carnival ride or a school. These are what traditional religious concepts say. That incarnation is a school. It's a school for souls. In fact, the entire universe is a school for souls. That the whole purpose of the universe is actually a greenhouse and a school for souls. And it's this elaborate mechanism for the deepest part, which we haven't reached yet, the deepest part of our bodies, which is the soul body, which is an entity that is outside of time-space.
Okay, now when you say we haven't reached it, you mean that...
We haven't reached it in our discussion.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was going to try to clarify. Is it in our conversation we haven't reached it, or...
In our conversation today, we've just begun to touch on it with the subject of incarnation, i.e., there's the physical process of biological propagation, whereby either in vivo, there's in vivo or in vitro fertilization and babies are born, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And generations go forward, and families propagate, and generations flourish. Well, behind that, there is a whole hidden drama, which some cultures, which religions try to interpret what they call through a glass darkly, because religion is not science-based, it's belief-based, and therefore imperfect. And what is occurring in that area that now science is starting to explore, is that a series is that for each body represents a deeper self that is coming into this earthly experience, into this dimension, into this spacesuit to experience and add to its enrichment in its universe career. In other words, there's a multi-level experience going on here, and we're now in our Earth classroom, and that's what's so. And if we're having World War III or World War II, we're just killing ourselves.
Right.
I.e., it's the same group of souls, the human community of souls, that's killing each other. We're constantly going around and killing each other. And
okay, well, tell me this, since I, you might be the only person who has the answer to this. Way back when the Earth was young, there weren't that many souls walking around. And now we have over 6 billion, maybe close to 7 billion. So where are these all souls, separate souls? Where are they all coming from?
Well,
how many more are there?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And that, that you see, there's an interface between exopolitics and what I would call parapsychology or spiritual science. In other words, the science of the soul and the science of relations between our civilization and the multiplicity of dimensional civilizations in the universe. This is all related, and it all depends on the model of the universe that one has. That is, what was one before one came into a body? And, quote, where does one go after one leaves this body? That's the essence of it. And we have actual reports in exopolitics, which is the new political science of outer space, of people who are taking aboard spacecraft where they encounter, quote, their dead relatives. So these are some of the data points in science that we are now attempting to answer these questions.
Okay, well, I'm going to say something, which is that if I, you know, what you're describing also is similar to the tunnel and the light. When you have an NDE, near-death experience,
yes,
people
yes.
report going into a tunnel, and often very fast, and there's light at the end, and they get into this brilliant field of light, and they often describe paradisical flowers, things like this, and all their dead relatives. So let's just say that the spacecraft with the dead relatives and the tunnel of light, those are the same thing somehow, and I couldn't even begin to imagine how they're the same, but for this discussion, I'll assume that they're the same. So now, we're seeing our relatives who are gone, so they are presumably disembodied, but why are we seeing them in their bodies again? Is this just another form of recognition that's registering in an experiential sense? Or what is it? Why do they look like
yes,
our
yes,
relatives?
This is where this is where we have to speak very tentatively, because some of the textbooks in this field are books like 30 Years Among the Dead, you know, of a person who died and spent 30 years among the dead and then came back and is writing about it.
Who is that person? Is there... There's such a book, I'm assuming. Right?
Yeah.
And who's the author?
I can't can't recall it now, but for example, there's the works of Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia Medical School, who studies the phenomenon of reincarnation. And some of his books are, for example, 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation. So that there is a whole field which is interrelated with the field of exopolitics, which is now studying, I would say, to get it back to the topic of the show, I realize that we've gone far afield.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Oh, by the way, I Googled the 30 Years Among the Dead. It's Carl Wicklund.
Yes.
Carl August Wicklund, Wickland. Wicklund, M.D. And it's also, it can be downloaded. So just Google it. Yeah, you can buy it on Amazon. So anyway, for those who are interested.
Okay, good. And so, in a way, this is, to tie it into the topic, these are further studies of the electromagnetic spectrum. Because what we call life is what we call, that's the experience of being in our physical bodies in a very defined portion of the electromagnetic spectrum for a very defined portion of time-space. But we exist outside of time-space. Our deeper, deepest portion of self, of the self, the soul, exists outside of time-space. In a subspace dimension, and we have a multi-dimensional career in the universe, which various religions, try to define. If you look at the Christian religion, for example, they have a very simplistic model of heaven and hell. You know, you get one chance to bat, and you either go to heaven or you go to hell. That really apparently has nothing to do with the historical person of Jesus, but more the political and psychological manipulations of the Christian, Catholic and the Christian organizations, the religious organizations. If you look at more the Eastern religions, for example, Tibetan Buddhism, and the way that it has opened itself up to being examined by science, notably with all of the psychological studies, there have been many psychological studies that have been welcomed by the Tibetan Buddhist area. The Tibetan Buddhist model may be more accurate, although it, again, that's a very ancient science, and may be an antediluvian science that goes back before some of the great earth traumas that we suffered over the last 13,000 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so how do we bring this back to the manipulation of electromagnetism in such a way that it is hurting us into submission and even oblivion, rather than expanding our possibilities and uniting us in whatever, productivity and bliss and all that good stuff.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that, first of all, what I'd like to do is to maintain this level of awareness before going back into the 9/11 area, and to say that my analysis has led me to believe that the powers behind 9/11 And there are various terms for them: the International War Crimes Racketeering Organization, the Cabal, they're just different terms. Each term is not fully adequate.
Okay.
There's the music.
We'll
come back on the other end.
Yes, we'll be back in 3 minutes. You're listening to Expansion on republicbroadcasting.org. This is Sophia, your host, and I am speaking today with Alfred Weber, and we're trying to meander back into the area of HAARP, or rather the utilization of force in the electromagnetic spectrum, or capability in the electromagnetic spectrum such that it is impairing our well-being rather than enhancing it. So, Alfred.
Right. You know, and through the miracle of synchronicity, during the break, Lorraine Murray came online on Skype.
Yeah.
And so I asked her immediately to call RBN. So she should be calling RBN right now on Skype.
Okay.
So she'll be joining us for the second hour, which is good, because she has prepared an extensive outline that goes in detail onto the specific applications of HAARP at the World Trade Center, and shows that the footprint of the event that occurred at the World Trade Center as a matter of science corresponds to an electromagnetic event, not to an explosive event.
Okay.
Yeah. So now I don't know. So what we can do, Sophia, it just can continue. Oh, it says, Lorraine is saying the phone access is blocked. I just get a busy signal. Is there another phone that she should call, or?
Well, let's try to figure that out in our next break. So we'll have a short break, and then I will try to get Lorraine on the line myself so that we can continue this. So we have just.
Okay.
3 or 4 minutes, and is there anything you want to say before we... I know that certain listeners are interested to hear how HAARP was the agent of destruction at the World Trade Center, because I received some emails this week, so that'll be good. And
right.
Yes. So is there anything that we should establish about HAARP or electromagnetism as an introduction to that?
Yes. If we go and look at what occurred on September 11th, 2001, first of all, one of the key factors is that the seismic record, that is, there are various seismic laboratories around in New York City. I know that there's a seismic laboratory in. Here's the thing. Let me just say that Lorraine is saying she's trying to call 800-313-9443.
Yes, we'll figure it out.
And is so, busy.
Yes.
And
all right, we'll get her on. Don't worry.
Okay.
We have a couple of minutes of break, and we'll be back.
Okay, great.